from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Ursula, what'd you think about that 9 o'clock hour?
It was very packed, full of emotion.
Yes.
Really strong.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have to top it in this 10 o'clock hour.
Let's go.
Okay, and I think we can do it.
All right, let's get to it.
What's new at 10?
I love how we got right to it. You know, first of all, I want to mention it is your birthday.
Hey, thank
Happy
you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you,
big
my friend.
Day.
Yep, appreciate you.
But we do have a lot of news to cover. And in this 10 o'clock hour, we want to revisit a story that we started off our show with. And this is about that Seattle homeowner who was living in his van while his delinquent tenant was staying in his house, essentially rent-free for many months on end. That homeowner's name is Jason Roth, and this is a story that Jesse Jones at Cairo 7 TV picked up, and it really got a lot of attention because it was very frustrating that Jason was not able to kick out the tenant because King County has a backlog of 600 eviction cases, and the tenant was able to illegally list the home as a short-term rental on Airbnb. So that is your background, and we wanted to have a chance to speak to Jason Roth, and he joins us now on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, yeah, thank you for joining us again. So we're going to get to the update here in just a second, but I want to take care of a little bit of business because one of the things in our telling of the story, and it's really important for me to get the facts straight, in our telling of the story, we've been saying that you have been living in a van, you were living in a van at the property, and I think maybe a lot of people were under the impression that you were struggling to make ends meet. But there is a story that was published by Publicola talking about how that is not the case. And if you could just kind of share that so we can get that out of the way and then we can get into the details.
Sure. Yeah, I obviously read that. And basically every single line in that was not based in fact. And they really spun it to make it extremely political and make me to be the villain somehow in this situation. The expenses I've had to face this year were a lot. And every penny I went towards lawyers. And so I have basically not slept in the same bed for any night in a row, whether it be my van or friends' couches. And that story was just like disgusting. And, yeah, they're horrible people to even consider writing something like that and make this guy look like he was the victim. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Hey, Jason, were you on the hook for all of the expenses that you incurred?
Every penny of it.
Wow.
Okay, and how much were those expenses in total?
So just in legal fees, it was about $35,000. I mean, my blood's boiling thinking about that article right now. But it was about $35,000 in legal fees. I still have $2,000 that I'm paying back incrementally to the city for his utilities that he didn't pay. There's damage to the property, which since I can't afford to pay anyone to do it, I'm just there, you know, every morning and every night doing painting and this and that. I mean, it's money-wise, there was like probably $40,000 to $45,000 in just hard costs, not including the lost rent. But then my time, I've spent so much unproductive time dealing with this year and it's still happening. I mean, that's valuable as well.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So tell us that you had to go to court. So this tenant was there. He was able to get rent or get money out of your home, even though he wasn't paying rent. Explain that.
So in my lease, it says, you know, there's provisions in there for subletting, and how he decides he wants to do that is, you know, generally okay if we agree upon it. But he didn't pay rent. He didn't comply with multiple parts of the lease. He didn't have insurance. He didn't pay rent. He didn't pay the deposit. He didn't do anything. So he wasn't allowed to do anything with the property, let alone rent it out to someone else. The way he got the license was telling the city he owned the property, and it was a nightmare getting them to shut it down. I mean, so it was all just lies.
And when he was able to do that, what was his reason to you to just stop paying rent? Because at some point he was paying you rent, right? I mean, he paid maybe the first year and then he stopped?
No, so the first year it was under a property management company and he was dealing with them. The property management company paid me. I don't know if he was paying them. That's something I don't know. But then I heard he wasn't. And then when I started working with him, you know, he was telling me about this business he was starting, this and that. And I was like, well, great. You know, you can rent this house. You can pay me. And then when he said he couldn't, I tried to do payment plans with him and do what he could. And I got $1,000 out of him in two small chunks, and that was it. And that didn't even cover the deposit.
Okay, so Jason, we talked to you before, and take us all the way up to the moment that Kareem was finally forced to leave. Now, did he leave on his own, or did the sheriff show up? Tell us how that last part went down.
So he hadn't been paying. Before I even contacted an attorney, I tried to work it out with him, you know, giving him an option to try to leave or to pay. He agreed to things and never followed through with them. And at the last resort was to get this attorney, which was the only thing I could do. That cost all this money. Finally, in the end, you know, thanks to help from Rental Housing Association, who found me a great attorney, they came to a settlement with Kareem. And even then, he agreed to that settlement, which was he just leaves, no money paid, you know, a bunch of other things that were beneficial to him. And he still didn't leave on the day he was supposed to leave, which was a year after he stopped paying. So it's like you give people an inch and they take miles. And the sheriff had to step in at that point.
So now you have access and control of your property again, as of this morning? Okay, so are you going to continue to rent it, or have you changed your mind on that?
The city has done me so wrong. I liked being a landlord in the past. I had always provided bedrooms that were like $500 or $600. It was a positive experience generally, but I know myself and other people, there's no way I'm going to get back involved in that situation. I mean, I can't tell you how many other people I've spoke to who are pulling themselves out of that market because it's just too much of a risk. I can't afford another year of my life to go down the drain like just happened. You know, and I want to say one other thing that didn't get reported on in the Cairo story. You know, certain articles like that Publicola article tried to make this Kareem guy as some victim. When he got evicted and pulled out, there was another process server for another separate lawsuit who he owed money to someone waiting for him. I mean, this is a guy who is a serial scam artist, obviously, and I just happened to cross paths with him, and it's horrible. And I can't believe that tax dollars are going to fund people's scams like this. It just, it makes my blood boil.
Well, and let's get to that, because one of the things that you pointed out, go ahead, G, actually.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to as well. You're on the path talking about the tax dollars, and I got to tell you, I'm upset about that too, especially that it was our tax dollars that helped Kareem be able to wipe away the eviction on his record. And now he has opportunity to go out here and do it again. So let me ask you this present day, because I'm sure that there's someone right now that's maybe thinking about renting out their home, maybe thinking about being a landlord. Are things a little better today than they were when you first started this? Or are you saying right now, it is awful, you better think twice?
If you tried to do everything by the book like I did, I registered the property, I did, you know, everything I was supposed to do, there is an opportunity for you to get absolutely screwed. Unless your rental criterion is through the roof and prohibitive to most people. So that's what's happening here. So I wish there were more units available in an affordable price range. I did make that happen with my house, but why would I do that again? Why would I put myself out there like that? There's plenty of other people who feel the same way. Their credit criterion is super high. Their income criterion is as high as it can be. I mean, that's what's happening. It's a war being created between housing providers and tenants, and I really wish it wasn't the case.
What would you, if somebody was renting right now, because this person is going to be able to do the background check and it won't show up because they were able to make a deal with the eviction being wiped off. What precaution, what would you say to someone, say, hey, if you're going to be renting, ask for this or look for this? What information could you give them?
I'm not the right person to ask because, I mean, I could tell you all things that I would do, but I would not be a landlord without joining a group of people that helps, like Rental Housing Association of Washington. there's so many laws that you can't keep track with, or with some things that are going on in Olympia, that it's essential to be a part of a group like that, just so you know, like, the ground you're walking on.
Yeah. Now, Jason, for someone who finally, after all this time, no longer has to deal with that particular tenant. As you mentioned in a different interview, even though it is a victory, it doesn't really feel like a victory to you.
No, I mean, I feel like I've been traumatized by this whole thing, and like, I'm like extremely shaken up, and I don't know what I'm going to do with the house. Too much house for me. Like, I'm probably either going to sell it, or I don't know, but, I'm sorry. Can you say the question again? I'm like,
well,
already, like,
just I want to. I know, and I want to ask you, because you still have what, tens of thousands of dollars that you are owed. What does that mean for a person like you?
Well, I mean, what is this guy going to be able to pay me back? It's too much heartache for me to try to. I mean, I'm not going to get anything out of this guy. He's got absolutely nothing, and he's going around taking from people. The most valuable thing for me is to try to get my life back on track, try to do things that, like, bring me joy, because I feel like I've been just miserable this entire last year. So I'm trying to, like, build that back up. And, you know, I love being a landlord, quote unquote, and, like, renting rooms out and creating little communities, stuff like that. It's like, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore. I got to just try to find things that bring positivity and not this. This has just been like a nightmare. I mean, as you could probably imagine.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jason, I sure appreciate you sharing your story. It certainly has prompted a lot of people to talk about landlord rights, and there's now an anti-squatting initiative that is going to possibly be on the November ballot, and I'm sure stories like yours help contribute to people wanting to support things like that. Appreciate your time.
Eric, can I say one quick thing?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's this landlord rights thing. I look at some of the comments. This thing's already going viral in the latest story, and I looked at some of the comments, and there's two sides that have fundamentally different beliefs that will never be able to agree, because on one side you have people bashing me on the internet saying, you know, abolish all housing rights, like landlords are inherently evil. Okay. And then those people are arguing with other people saying, like, why are you vilifying me as a housing provider? That alone is making it more expensive because I'm raising my criterion. So it's like this, like, battle of people with different belief system, and it's sad because the rental housing availability and prices are just going to go up.
Hey, and be Jason, I'll tell you this, and Ursula and I, when we were talking during the pandemic and we were talking about rent moratoriums and things, as someone, for me personally, as someone who had a very hard time finding and being able to afford housing, also because my credit was not good, me having to go to Craigslist to rent personal the properties of the mom and pops and things, it is unfortunate that landlords get a bad rep. But the more that you guys are villainized, just understand this, the more that landlords are villainized, the less that we are going to be able to rent for. So if you're expecting all of these big investors to make it easy for you to rent, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, right.
You need the mom and pops to give people like me, who didn't have the good credit, an opportunity. Stories like this, what'd you say?
That's exactly what I was doing as a housing provider. It's like, I tried to take this guy in and work with him and, like, be his friend, I guess, you know, just like you're describing.
Well, and then now you don't want to be in the rental market anymore, and that is exactly what you know, the fear is with all these things that are, you know, siding with one over the other. And I'm sorry that this happened to you, and I appreciate you sharing your story. And I guess even though you don't feel like it's a victory and you're likely not going to get those tens of thousands of dollars back, I mean, I hope you do, but
I won't.
I'm glad that you finally don't have that continual headache.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
It'd be great to get back to, like, normal life.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jason. Appreciate your time, and all the best of luck to you, brother.
Hey, thanks, both of you.
You know, Ursula, I know what he's talking about, because I've gotten online, and I get really upset because it's usually the people that are screaming the loudest that have no clue about how hard it can be, right, out here. Because if you did have a clue, you would realize that if you villainize the landlords, it's only going to get harder for people that want to be able to rent. So the Jasons of the world who give an opportunity to someone, they're going to be like, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. I got to give love. Connie Hill. Her name's Connie Hill. She was the sweet lady that gave me an opportunity to rent. And my credit was bad. There was no reason for her to rent to me. My past was not good. And she gave me a chance, right? And because of that, I was able to continue going. So
you had a roof over your head.
I had to give Connie Hill her props because she didn't have to do that. There are other landlords that do that for people. And so when they get messed over, they get to the point where they're like, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah, I just don't even understand this whole idea of squatters' rights or the... It was actually Chef who texted me last night, and I said, I just cannot think of very many situations where I would be okay with someone squatting on my property. It really would. I don't even know why that is a thing. And so I need to dig into that because I look at this and it's just frustrating to hear Jason's story and similar stories like that where people decide, well, this property is vacant, I'm just going to live here. I get it if that's your only option, but then to say that now you have rights over it, when the owner wants their property back, I don't get it.
You just mess it up for other people that are out here trying to do the right thing. And so, and then when this person, tax dollars, are able to remove Ursula, the eviction. So now this person will get to go and he's going to possibly do this again. Because if he did it once, he can do it twice. All right. Coming up at 10:30, as you guys heard the news, was reported this morning, O.J. Simpson dead at the age of 76 after a cancer battle. Well, our very own Bill
Kazarba
is going to come and join us. He was a producer on CNN during that, and he covered the entire trial day after day. And so he's going to join us. We're going to ask him questions about that. Next, Gene Ursula.
This hour of the G and Ursula Show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. Shortly before the start of our show today, we got the breaking news that O.J. Simpson had died. His family says he died from prostate cancer. He was 76 years old. And of course, hearing the news brought a whole range of emotions from all of us who were here and were covering that trial, which was 9 months long. It was back in 1995. It was considered the trial of the century, one of the most publicized and watched trials in American history. I could not even imagine trying to cover it for a network like CNN, but we have someone here in studio, Bill Kazarba, our colleague and the digital content editor at MyNorthwest.com. Bill, you were executive producer at CNN during the trial.
Yes, I was. And it's good to join you guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, OK, first of all, we talk about media circus. That must have been pretty stressful to cover that.
Well, media circus almost is an understatement. It was one of the craziest things you ever saw because here was a trial in Hollywood, if you will. And so the defense attorneys were stars. The prosecutors were stars. Then you had O.J. Simpson. You had these odd characters like Cato Kalin, the guy that lived in the guest house, and all this other stuff. So it was a crazy confluence of things. Then, of course, you had the Bronco chase.
Yes. Okay, so let's go back to that infamous Bronco chase and covering that, because, I mean, that was a monumental part of the coverage, and that was such a big thing. So take us back to that day. Were you actually working that day?
Yes.
And that, okay, so talk about the sequence of events and the decisions that were being made and what you were being told or what you were telling people about that coverage.
Right. Well, we were kind of being told by the LAPD that O.J. Simpson would turn himself in. So they went to and they said that he could turn himself in because he was so famous. They said that there's no way he's going to try to flee. I mean, where is he going to go? So went to his house. They actually had a limo. It wasn't the LAPD, but the people that were going to bring him to the offices. And then he never came out that side. So he was with his friend Al Cowling, and they finally figured out that there was no one in the house. And then they had to try to find this vehicle, and the way they found it was mainly news helicopters. And then you had this bizarre chase where you had them going at relatively slow speeds with a triangle of 20 police cars trailing behind, and then people gathering on the bridges, yelling support mostly for OJ, go OJ, and all. It was just bizarre.
Seeing that image, let's just go to the Bronco traveling down the freeway. People on the side of the road, go OJ, and the police just handle it with kid glove. To me, that is a microcosm of what we have seen in society and how there is a difference on how celebrities or those with status are treated compared to those. That's why I always say the criminal justice system is for the rich and guilty and not the poor and innocent. I want to ask you this, though. Have you or will you, we ever see something covered like this, the way it was covered in your newsroom? Because even though we saw it play out on TV, I'd imagine when you went to work every day, there was just a high energy all the time, Bill.
Right, absolutely. And it's just almost impossible to predict whether we'll see anything like this. But I can tell you the big thing that made this trial unique is here's a star who was very loved. I mean, if you remember O.J. Simpson on NBC Sports, I never met him. I don't know the man. But he was eminently likable. He seemed
he was one of the most beautiful people ever.
Handsome.
Yes, so
cheerful.
Handsome. Yes.
Remember the Hertz commercials where he's leaping over the benches and all that other kind of stuff? But then you get this matched up with race relations with the LAPD at the time. You get it matched up with kind of this all-star defense team. You get it matched up with Marcia Clark and her curls and the hair. Her hair became
a big
thing, and she changed the hair in the middle of the trial. It was a bizarre circus. Almost, if you'd made it into a movie before it happened, no one would believe it.
Well, how did that trial change coverage of trials in terms of cable? Because that was kind of a milestone.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that people believed, people that had money and could create networks and create coverage, that they could make things like court TV and people would watch them all the time. What they didn't realize is most trials, including this one, had long stretches of tedious legal process.
It would not make for good TV.
And there's no way people were going to sit through that. So they always came through when the glove went on. Remember, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. And all that other stuff. Everybody thinks about that. But it was a seven-month trial, 9 to 5.
So take us into, Bill, take us into the newsroom. Now, we all remember where we were, where we heard the verdict, right? Okay. And it was wherever you were, the verdict.
Right.
Tell us what the newsroom was like after the verdict. Because I'd imagine for a long time it was intense and high energy, and you didn't have that to do. What was the feeling like in the newsroom then, after it was all done?
Well, I think, to be perfectly honest and open about the reaction, there was shock in the newsroom.
Shock, for sure.
Okay.
In this newsroom,
there was
too.
The air went out of the place. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I read and heard and just observed, but I only observed them through media just like everyone else.
Okay.
Is that most black people, most African Americans thought he was not guilty.
Truth.
And most white people, you know, when the surveys were taken, said he was guilty. So now you had this collision of races. along with the trial, and everybody was kind of, it almost was the beginning of the divisions in the country about here's one side, here's another. And no pun intended, it was black and white. Yeah. There was nobody sitting on the fence.
I was in my college cafeteria. Everything you just said in my college cafeteria is exactly how it was. All of the black people were in one area, and all of the white people were on this side. And when it happened, the black people at that time, I'm just telling you guys what happened, cheering. And then on the other side, there were people crying.
Right.
In real time. October, was it October 1995? I think the verdict came out. True story.
Absolutely.
Well, the other thing that it also brought up was the use. We take it for granted today, but the use of DNA evidence. That was just kind of the beginning of all of that. And that was a big...
It really was the beginning.
It really was the beginning.
Which they had all of. The DNA evidence was all against OJ. OJ is only found not guilty because of one thing and one thing that happened. Mark Furman committed perjury on the stand.
Right.
If that doesn't happen...
Yeah. Right. Right. And then remember, there was the
Mark
civil
Furman,
trial.
From Washington, by the way.
The civil trial found him responsible, quote unquote, for the murders.
Yes. Phil, fascinating stuff.
Yeah,
okay,
Bill.
Just real quick, what was your reaction then when you heard that he died today?
It was interesting. I thought immediately of what you said. It was, I don't know what to think.
Yeah.
Bill?
It was kind of this right going,
Stay the right, stay on the news. Let me, Let me do it.
G had a very strong opinion. Listen to our podcast if you want to go back to that one.
I'll have to do that
Bill
as well.
Zarba, you can find his great content on mynorthwest.com.
Love Bill.
It's always a pleasure to be with you guys.
We got to have you come in more often, man.
You
got a bunch of stories.
Yes, I do. I have some stories.
He really does.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, Ursula, I want to ask you a question. There's this song, right, that gets sang, and it's from Neil Diamond, and I have a lot of questions because it has to do with this scenario, and for some reason, it seems like it's the anthem for some of you guys, this Neil Diamond song, and you guys get really happy when this song comes on, so this scenario is going to be centered around that.
Okay,
next,
can't wait.
She and Ursula.
Scenarios is brought to you by 1-800-BUI-AWAY.
Ursula, you like that song?
I sure do.
All right, let's get the scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
All right, this scenario, I think you guys can all relate to this kind of. So my husband sang Sweet Caroline a few months ago at a karaoke party. Everyone applauded and people said nice things to him. He's been out of control ever since, and it's embarrassing. He tries to talk like Neil, randomly breaks into his songs at dinners and social events, and constantly uses lyrics from his songs in conversations. I don't know what to do about it. It's like he thinks he's Neil Diamond. I told him he needs to back off a bit, and he said he was finally finding himself and compared it to Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Don't even know who that is. I had to look it up to figure out what he meant. What do I do about this guy? Why do I feel like I should have researched that name before even doing this scenario? I don't even know who that is.
So, well, the Jonas, so there, that is the name of an album from Neil Diamond.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, but it's also Jonathan Livingston Seagull. I think he's an author. Okay, now I'm...
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, well... So this person needs help. They wants to know what to do about their husband. They keeps breaking out in Neil Diamond lyrics, singing Sweet Caroline. So 888-973-5476 is the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. And the reason why it stood out to me, Ursula, is this. Whenever I hear that song come on, I look at the Pauls and Nicks of the world, and it just seems like they get really happy when that song comes on. So
it is a happy tune. Okay, hold on. I need to correct myself.
Okay.
It's a novel. So Jonathan Livingston Seagull is a fable in novella form written by American author Richard Bach and illustrated with black and white photographs shot by Russell Munson. It's about a seagull who's trying to learn about flying. It's about personal reflection, freedom, and self-realization. That's what that's about.
Okay. And that's why Ursula is on the show. By the way, Stephen Seattle was ready for that. He said it was a book by Richard Bach in the
exactly,
early 70s.
Exactly.
Okay,
thank you.
Ursula, your thoughts on this. Do you get happy when you hear Sweet Caroline?
It's catchy. It is catchy. Now, would I think it's strange if my partner started taking on the personality of the person who the songwriter, Neil Diamond, and would only speak in verses from songs?
Yeah,
that would be weird. But he's just having fun. He got a little bit of confidence because people thought he sounded really good on a particular song. If that's his worst offense, just ride with
it. Is he taking
it
too far, though?
Of course.
All right.
I mean, are there things that bug you about your partner, but, you know, if it brings them joy, are you going to make them stop it immediately?
When she sneezes, it bothers the heck out of me.
What's wrong with Lillian's sneeze? Okay.
Hey, ask our friend group. That thing is the loudest thing in the world.
Can I just tell you?
Huh?
I can completely relate with Lillian. When I have to sneeze, if someone makes me do a like that, forget about it. I'm blowing out my eardrums. Just let it hang.
Okay, that's fine.
But why does it bother you so
because
much?
Because a part of me that think Lillian does it on purpose. It is, no. You see this little lady, and you're, how in
She's
the world?
She's a powerhouse.
How can you sneeze that loud?
Okay, and by the way,
yeah.
Would you like it if she told you, gee, don't talk so loud?
Oh. Oh, good point.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, she's got a loud sneeze.
Well, this ain't about me. It's about her.
And it's your birthday. So
it's my birthday. I get to
just let you pass. Right,
Paul, what do you think about this, bro?
You know, as someone who loves to annoy my fiance with similar stuff like this, I sing obnoxious songs, I'm loud, I'm a big goofball. There's a limit, but you got to at least let him have his fun. And I think there is something there to say if he's really enjoying himself by singing and expressing himself, there's something there. But it's okay to be like, hey, tone it down a little bit. Because as someone who does that same exact thing, I will sing a song until my fiance is steaming from the ears. We're just having fun. Well, but you gotta know. You got to be thinking,
Ursula, I got
to
know.
Man, of all the problems to have, though. Someone just having joy in their heart and singing songs?
So can Nick and or Paul, can you guys tell me why you guys get so happy when Sweet Caroline comes on?
Well, I'm not going to speak for everyone else, but, you know, me personally, I'm not getting too excited over this song. But if there were any other event from maybe a Red Sox game, maybe I'd be all over this being a total pain in the you-know-what, and I'd be pulling the cord on the mic as soon as the song starts. But since this is a wedding, I think I'm going to let it slide under the cracks, although I would be in the crowd of rolling my eyes to the songs of Jewish Elvis, as they once called Mr. Diamond. I'll give Pops this one time to break into his element, even if it's a subpar attempt of impersonating this guy's voice. I guarantee you nobody gave him that as a request, though. He's been saving that in his back pocket for a few years.
Ty and Milton points out correctly that they sing Sweet Caroline on cruise ships. Everyone waves their napkins. It's a big deal.
Okay.
I get it.
I got East Coast family, so the Red Sox thing, when they sing it at the games, that's where mine comes from.
All right. I'll tell you why I'm no fun at parties. Because when I see Nick and or Paul get excited about this, I see you do the bop, 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 that part, right? And then you don't know any other word after that. Well, I don't see, you don't know anything else. So I watch, and I'm so uncomfortable watching Billy and Steve and Frank and Bill and Ben. That's all them out there, by the way.
Yeah, you don't need to know more than bop, bop, bop.
But it's Sweet Caroline.
But it's so uncomfortable to watch people not know the words the rest of the time. So the next time you hear it come on, watch people after that. They're like, oh, time to take a sip.
Oh, no, Lori in the 206. So good. So good.
You're right.
You're right, Lori.
Right. So good. And then that's it.
Here comes G.
Oh.
Sweet Caroline. Ba, 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 ba. It was a little early.
All right. See, you don't know the words.
No.
Coming up next, Agree to Disagree. This is G and Ursula.